buddy Bill Buckmaster, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, my phone has been going absolutely bananas. Just had to turn it off, which I usually remember to do before the show, but the warnings. What's going on?
Well, the Catalinas are being inundated.
Uh-oh.
We were just looking at the radar map, and all of the Catalinas are covered by rain coming down, so it's got to be runoff coming off of the Catalinas and into the washes, Pantano, CDO.
Wow.
So that's what I'm thinking of.
Okay, thanks for the update. Tom, and before you go, today was Amona's Danish Bakery Day.
I've been so busy in here, I haven't had a chance. It's over there, and it's looking at me, and I am going to attend to it here momentarily.
Kurt Prendergast of the Arizona Daily Star had his piece. He's with me in studio. Now you can say, Kurt, that you have enjoyed a slice of Mona's Danish Bakery, the Danish Kringle, which they're known for.
Finally, that's true.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, that was delicious.
It was. That apricot filling was to die for. All right. It is Friday. It is August the 12th, 2022. The Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, our live line. We do our telephone interviews, which our Friday Focus interview today will be over the phone with Tim Tomier. So that is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Also, a couple of quick shout-outs. Thanks, Dylan Smith at TucsonSentinel.com for prominently displaying a link to the Buckmaster Show. Dan Shear supports us at the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun, Tucson Local Media Group, and its portfolio of publications, including Inside Tucson Business, Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Our Friday Focus interview on the live line. Tim Tomier is with us, Assistant City Manager for the City of Tucson. Tim, aren't you sorry right now that you're not in studio and that you missed a piece of the Danish Kringle?
I've never regretted anything more than not being there for Apricot Kringle Day.
Yep, you missed it, my friend, but you know, you're pretty darn busy, and we do appreciate you taking some time out. The reason he's so busy, listen to this. Tim oversees the public works functions of the City of Tucson, including Tucson Water, Parks and Rec, Environmental and General Services, Planning and Developmental Services, Transportation and Mobility, Housing and Community Development. Does he ever have time for a life? You got to wonder. Tim, how are you?
I'm doing well. I'm actually out in the field harvesting some of this rainwater off the Catalinas. So
yeah,
if you hear the winds in the background, that's just me collecting some rainwater.
But there you go. Tim's president, also the Arizona Water Association. You're still pursuing that PhD, right, at the UA?
That's correct. My next class starts up here in about a week.
And your dissertation is exploring the Arizona Drought Contingency Plan as a climate change adaptation strategy. And as I mentioned, Kurt Prendergast is with us, opinion page editor of the Arizona Daily Star. Tim, the Interior Department, or was it the Bureau of Reclamation, gave the Colorado River Basin states, was it 60 days? And I believe that expires next week to come up with their latest thinking on the drought.
That's correct, Bill. It's actually coming up on or about September 1st. We have the basin states feverishly working on their positions relative to how do we generate more conservation and water savings in the basin so that we can address the challenges that we have from declining water levels in Lakes Mead and Powell and the continuing drought, despite what you see out your window today.
Did the City of Tucson agree to give back some of the CAP allotment, Tim Tomier?
The mayor and council have authorized the staff to negotiate leaving additional water in Lake Mead, and so we've got that deal on the table. That could be as much as 30,000 acre feet, even still in 2022. For context, that's about 20% of our annual allotment of water, and so we could we could come to an agreement. We haven't finalized anything, but those negotiations are going on a daily basis, and everybody's all hands on deck to try to help the river.
Can we do that? Can the people of Tucson rest assured we can pitch in like that and not jeopardize our own water supply?
That's a great question, Bill. And yes, we can. We have rights to about 144,000 acre feet of water per year from the Colorado. Our current demand, when you look at all of our potable demand right now, is right around 100,000 acre feet per year. So what we traditionally do with that is we buy all of the water we have rights to. We use, 2/3 of it on an annual basis, and then we store the rest for the future. And what we would be doing is taking less water that we would have been storing for the future and allowing it to stay in the river and lake in order to keep a shortage from getting even worse.
Let's bring in my friend Kurt Prendergast. Kurt, go ahead. You're with Tim Tomier.
Hi, Tim. I have a really big question here. I've been looking at those photos of Lake Mead and Lake Powell, and it looks bad. And I just wanted to know, if we do get to that kind of like the Deadpool level on the river, what happens to Tucson?
Another great question. So Tucson is has the most resilient water supply in the southwestern U.S. So, and I'll explain why in a moment, but the key message for Tucsonans is because we've always done a great job with water conservation and we continue to do so, we live well within our means from a water supply perspective. And we are also unique in that the way we take our Colorado River water and use it is we take all of that water and we put it into our local aquifers, our local groundwater, and then we store it there and we pump it out when we need it. So we have a difference in Tucson than other communities where they have to have water delivered to them every day through the canal system in order to put water through their treatment plant and into their taps. Tucson, because we use our aquifers to store and treat our water and also buffer against interruptions in supply, we can withstand an interruption or a Deadpool situation for weeks, months, or even years on end without it affecting the water coming out of the tap in Tucson.
Mm. I mean, what's the time frame for Deadpool? How many more years of the drought would we have before we would have to worry about that?
Well, it's not as many years as any of us would like to think. It is. Everything changes every year when you have the snowfalls and snowmelt that happens in the Colorado River Basin. So it's a big basin. A lot of things change on an annual basis. But if we keep on the pace we're on and we're not able to reduce water demand and we don't get significant increases in moisture or runoff, then it could be within a decade.
Mm.
It is a river that's in peril. There's a crisis on the Colorado River. The key thing is it's not a crisis for Tucson because of all the investments we've made over the past. It's very urgent. It's a very big deal. But Tucson's in the best position of any community for those challenges on the river.
Are you saying, Tim, and I've been in town 34 years, and I remember Beat the Peak and all those ads from Tucson Water. Has that paid off then?
Absolutely. Tucson, even though we've had significant growth in population and, quite frankly, in our economy, we actually use less water today than we used in the mid-2000s, or like around 2004, 2005. In fact, we've dropped water use by about 30% during that time frame. So because Tucsonans are who they are and they do what they do, we're in really good position, and we just need to keep doing that. And I will also add, the mayor and council have charged staff with looking at how do we do even more. And that does include the potential to contribute water to the lake and the river, as you mentioned earlier. But they're having us look at 5 additional drought response policies that we'll bring back to council for them to consider, which could make our water conservation ethic even stronger.
All right. And I know Matt has been waiting on the live line caller, Matt. But Matt, let me just ask one quick follow-up to Tim of what he just talked about those five water conservation measures. And one of them is zero, what they call net zero for developers?
That's correct, Bill. So we call it net zero water. And at the very highest level, that means looking at ways that every new building or house that is built in our service area has a net zero impact on our water supply. And that can happen a few ways. One is the way you build a house or a building that can affect the amount of water demand it has. You can also look at local rainwater and stormwater harvesting as a way to offset your water use. We have a reclaimed water system or recycled water system that is accessible in some areas of the community. And then also, at the end of the day, it could be that we do everything we can on that new development to make it have as little impact on our water supply, but maybe there's still some demand that comes from it. And then we can have a fee or an in-lieu payment that developer would make that we would use to fund other water conservation elsewhere in the community. For example, investing it in existing houses where we have low-income homeowners, but we could do provide the funding for them to replace their toilets or appliances to reduce water use. So that's a long explanation of net zero water, but that is one of the policies, and it is a way where we continue to have a thriving economy and continue to grow, but do it in a water-wise way.
All right. Well, let's clear the phone lines before we take our break, Tom, who, by the way, just finishing and gave me a thumbs up, just finishing his Danish Kringle, apricot-filled Kringle. Let's go to Matt first on line two. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah. Hey, Tim. A couple days ago, we had Raul Grijalva on the show and speaking to Bill. And I got a chance to really ask him a direct question about a strategic plan. And while I respect everything the city council is doing and on water conservation, all this, we're in a crisis situation. We need a strategic plan in action, even if it's not the 100% solution that everybody thinks it's going to come. Obviously the desal plant, has always been discussed. I don't think the one in Mexico makes any sense. I think that Buszewski should get with Sinema and really push for a desal plant on the Pacific Coast, and they just need to move on this. They need to get this done within the next 3 to 5 years. Even if it's not a perfect solution, we need to get water from a different source.
All right. Quickly, Tim, go ahead.
Sure. I appreciate that comment. And I will say that urgent action is imminent at the state level. With the recent budgets that were passed and legislation that was passed, the Water Infrastructure Financing Authority, or WIFA for the state, is evolving and becoming a much more robust agency and has about $1 billion of budget made available to it to do to explore and then eventually implement things, just like what the caller was saying.
All right, here's Roberta now calling us on line three. Quickly, Roberta, what would you like to add to our conversation?
That bill that was just passed for infrastructure and climate control also said it had water allotment in it. Could that provide the financing of a desalination plant, because the ocean is the only thing that is guaranteed not to run dry?
We hope not. Okay, go ahead, Tim.
Yes, that's we're very grateful to Senator Sinema for actually including that language and actual true dollar funding in that most recently passed legislation at the federal level. Whether it'll be earmarked directly for desalination or other solutions, I think that remains to be fully determined. But that is a new and profound source of funding to put apply to this concern.
Richard has reached out to me over my email. Quick question for Tim. Should Tucson have PSA commercials?
Bill Buckmaster.
Should you have PSA commercials on radio and TV, Tim, to encourage saving water?
Yes, absolutely. Most people are familiar with our campaigns over the past few years. You even mentioned Pete the Beak earlier. But we're gearing up for a big push on media, further encouraging our citizens to continue doing what they're doing, which is great, and maybe even giving some new ideas for things they can do better. But so completely in agreement, and I think you'll be seeing much more activity in the very near future.
All right. Should we take Michael here before the break? Yeah, let's take a lot of phone action today, which is wonderful. Michael, your quick question, then we'll take a break.
Well, we all know that the TEP uses water to produce energy for the steam. My question is that there's been talk in Congress and what in other places about a 750-megawatt nuclear plant that could provide energy for our area if we put one down here. They're a micro technology. My brother-in-law works at the Palo Verde Nuclear Power Plant on the water reclamation side, so I know that there's a possibility that it could be done. Every time you flush the toilet, you know, they process the water, they run it through the reactor. Is there a possibility for that so all these folks can have their electric cars charged and stuff like that?
My response is I think everything's on the table right now, and I am quite familiar with Palo Verde. For those of you that are listening that aren't familiar, it's the largest, if not the only, nuclear power plant that's not on a large body of water, a lake or a river. Because it actually is cooled by the wastewater or recycled water generated by the Phoenix Valley, the Phoenix community. Whether or not there would be a site near Tucson, I've not seen a site or heard anything specific about that. So I can't weigh in directly on whether that would work here in Tucson, but I do know that the concept it has been working in Phoenix for a number of years. And just to a related effort, the city is undertaking a climate action and adaptation plan process, and the energy portfolio, the shift to renewables, the shift from fossil fuels is a big element of that. And so I think that's in alignment with what you were saying.
All right. A very lively first segment, a lot of interaction on the phones, the phone line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. It is the Buckmaster Show Friday edition. We will take a break right here. Tim Tomier from the city of Tucson is with us. 790-2040 if you'd like to join in the conversation. Kurt Prendergast is with us from the Arizona Daily Star as well. We will be with you through the break and back in a few minutes. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio. Our live line, which has been extremely busy today, which is great, is presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Assistant City Manager Tim Tomier is with us. He oversees a bunch of functions at the city, including Tucson Water, and we've been talking a lot about water. Tim has a lot of expertise there. Kurt Prendergast of the Arizona Daily Star, where he is the opinion page editor, is with me. Another listener, Tim, wanted to know ultimately who will make the decisions on the water allotment on the Colorado River.
The best outcome for all of the water users is if the seven states who rely on the river plus the Republic of Mexico can come to a voluntary agreement that meets the goals set forth by the Secretary of Interior. And that's generally where we've landed in recent years, is where the states can really negotiate and promise and then commit to the water savings that are needed. If that is either unable to come together fast enough, or if we really can't get to the finish line, then ultimately the Secretary of Interior for the federal government can impose restrictions or cuts on the river.
One of the areas that Tim Tomier oversees is housing and community development. Kurt Prendergast of the Star has a question along those lines. Go ahead, Kurt.
Yeah, Tim, a while back there's a backlog for building permits, and I was wondering if you could kind of talk us through, like, you know, what caused that, and what is the city doing to alleviate it?
So that's very true. That one of our functions is we process the permits for all the construction activity in the city, and we do have a backlog. We've had a backlog that was reaching into extending our timeframes to be a month or two, or even longer than people would have expected, or even what we're committed to providing. So we've been doing a number of things in order to reduce that backlog and reduce those timeframes. One is at the June 7th Mayor and Council meeting, Mayor and Council authorized 14 additional staff to the Planning and Development Services Department. So it, as you know, or I could suspect, that takes a little while to get the hiring done and get those folks trained up. But those staff resources are on the way. In fact, we have five new staff starting on Monday and another four staff that'll be joining us the following week. So we're making good on that investment from the council. They also approved us to invest some money in our records management system, because that's one of our big pain points, is that a lot of our records are on microfiche, and it's a very manual process to fulfill those requests when people need that information. So we're going to be, we've been digitizing it slowly over time, but we're going to invest in a project to speed that up. And then finally, we've done some things to reorganize how we approach the what we call the queue. The backlog is permits that need to be reviewed, and they're in a queue. And we've typically had a one-size-fits-all approach to the queue. But that's kind of like if you go to the restaurant with your significant other and it's just the two of you, and you get seated behind a table of 20 and you see your server over there taking 20 orders and you just want to get your glass of wine. So we're doing some things to help expedite some of those low-hanging fruit so they don't have to be bogged down in the queue. It's still a big problem. We're not where we need to be. But in the last month, we've shaved 30 days off of our longest wait times in the queue. So we're headed in the right direction and help's on the way.
Hey, could you tell us a little more about, you know, what is being built? Why is there a backlog? It sounds like Tucson's actually growing.
Tucson's growing and the economic activity has been very significant. We still have a steady pace of single family residential. But what Tucson's been challenged with mostly lately is we've had a significant workload and investment load in both large multifamily, in commercial, and in industrial. And, you know, if you've been in Tucson for a long enough time, you know, our economy traditionally was service industry and single family homes. Well, that has really changed in the last 5 years, especially, but even through the onset of the pandemic, large commercial, large retail job-generating investments have been what has been happening in Tucson, and we've been struggling to keep up with that. We have tapped into the county. Pima County has helped us out by reviewing permits for us, although they're also quite busy, and we've tapped into the private sector to help us. But the economy and development has been rolling along at a pace that everybody's struggling to keep up, but it's been the nature of it as well. It's much more challenging, complex.
All right. Now we've got a couple of callers on the live line. We've got another email question. We are going to get to all of you. Russ on line two. Go ahead, Russ. You're with Tim Tomier.
Yeah, I lived on the Ibiza for 3 years, an island in Spain, and it was heavily developed by tourism and big hotels. They ran out of water and they went to desalinization, I'd say maybe 8-10 years ago. And there's a lot of ecological problems now. They have worse problems now with ecological, the residues of the salts and the chemicals, etc. And it's a worse problem, the lack of water. They gave in to a lot of, they didn't study it long enough.
Okay, Tim, there can be problems, as Russ points out, with the desal.
That's true, and I think a lot of lessons have been learned over the last few decades from our colleagues in Israel, Australia, and other parts of the globe where they've been able to successfully bring desalination into their water portfolios and address or even prevent many of those concerns expressed.
All right, Jim is up on line three. Jim, go ahead.
Yes, believe that the problem's been made so much worse by the special interests. They defeated the Citizens Growth Management back in 2000. Then they came back, defeated Conserving Arizona's Future, which would set aside some of our state trust lands for open space preservation, save the desert. And then they sued the town of Tortolita to force it to disincorporate. It was east of Marana because they wanted to save the desert, limit development. So I sued it to force it to disincorporate. Marana could annex that whole area to the east, to, you know, Island, to Tangerine, Thornydale, for massive development, which used an ever-increasing amount of water. And then finally, they got Prop 207 passed. And that basically was a classic bait and switch on the voters. They had all these ads on TV saying, well, the government could take your house, vote for Prop 207, keep what you have. That was the bait. The switch is it locks in all these bad rezonings, especially in Pinal County, where they zoned for 500,000 homes, and they can't rescind that because of.
All right. Obviously, Jim does not believe. It sounds like he's very upset. Tim, Tom, you're with the development, and let me kind of take off from what Jim said. The question the big question here is, say, we're going to run out of water at some point if this drought doesn't turn around. Is that safe to say, Tim?
I would not say it's safe to say we're going to run out of water at some point.
Okay.
There's just so many things that go into that response, but I'll hit just on a couple. One is the way that development occurs in Tucson is very compatible with the way we have arranged our water supplies, and both in the types of water we have, the way we manage it, and the quantity of water we have. But we're not just resting on those laurels. We are doing things like increasing our use of the locally available rain and stormwater runoff, like what we're receiving today. And as we talked a little bit earlier in the program about how we approach making it even more water efficient community moving forward with ideas not yet adopted, but soon to be in front of the mayor and council, like net zero water.
All right. Beth has sent me an email. This is great. We've got a lot of questions coming in on email, over the live line. Kurt and I in studio have a ton of questions. Beth wants to know, Tim, what's the status? Haven't heard about this in a long time on this lawsuit over the differential water rates. I have not heard an update on this in forever. Could you give us something?
It'll be a brief, unsatisfying update. The lawsuit filed by Pima County against the city is still ongoing, so I can't really comment on any of the detail of it. It is still an active lawsuit. What I will say is that is only one aspect of the relationship between the city and the county. We are working together in so many ways. That happens to be one area where there's a fundamental disagreement, and we're in a different type of conversation in the form of a lawsuit. But our ability to work together, collaborate, and get things done here locally hasn't really been negatively impacted by that. But it is still out there, so we'll have more to say in the future when we get some resolution there.
And Tim, and I know you have an important meeting at 12:45. I will make sure we're out of here in about 3 minutes. So the city of Tucson's budget is so strong that an extra $150 million is now available to spend. Where did the money come from, and how will it be used, Tim?
So the city's been able to accumulate that fund balance over the last about 5 to 6 years because of the fiscal policies of the mayor and council, and quite honestly, because of the leadership of our city manager, Michael Ortega. They took that challenge on from day one when Mr. Ortega arrived. This council, which has actually had elections since then and some new folks and folks in different roles, but they've had that common goal of making sure Tucson is financially and fiscally stable. So through that, and then with the economy that remained robust through the pandemic and sales tax revenues that have continued to increase, we've been able to accumulate those dollars. And so there's an investment plan to mobilize those dollars into investments in the community to address a number of needs and to address inequities across the community. Actually, the mayor and council are right in the middle of that discussion. They had a study session on it earlier this week. It'll continue at the next meeting and maybe a bit after that, to just assure that those monies are going toward things like roads improvements, things like public safety, things like transitioning our vehicle fleet to electrification. Significant investments in our parks, recreation, and aquatics facilities. So that's a lively, active discussion. But it good things can come to you when you have fiscal responsibility.
Quick question, less than a minute to go. Reed Park, we haven't gotten into parks. How's that going, the reimagining?
It's going really well. We had a really robust conversation during the first parts of the master plan process. So we've got a lot of good input there. The consultant and the parks team is working on gelling that all together into a next stage of the conversation. And we have actually come to a really great outcome on where the Pathway to Asia expansion of the Reed Park Zoo will be able to occur, but entirely within existing hardscape and not impacting any existing open space or green spaces of the park. So it's been a lot of conversation and discussion over the last probably 18 months, but we're in a much better place with Reed Park, the zoo, and what lies ahead.
Thank you very much, Tim Tommier. You've got 5 minutes to get to a very important meeting, so think you'll be able to make it. Appreciate all the input today. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you, and thank you to your listeners for a lively discussion.
Okay, thanks. Tim Tommier, Assistant City Manager, who oversees just a ton of stuff, let's leave it like that, in the city of Tucson. Kurt Prendergast of the Arizona Daily Star with me. We're going to talk to Kurt. Take a break right here. Be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The Buckmaster Show. Thank you to Tim Tommier of the City of Tucson. What a lively discussion. A lot of phone calls, a couple of emails coming in, a lot of interactive radio for our Friday Focus interview. Kurt Prendergast of the Arizona Daily Star is the opinion page editor. Kurt, I see you've put out pretty much you've been running this announcement every day telling folks, yes, what you're doing with endorsements. What is the latest?
Yeah, so what we put up in the last couple of days is we went through all the campaign websites for candidates at the local, state, and federal election that are, you know, related to Southern Arizona. And we went through and we gathered all, like, the organizations, the officials, the former officials, everybody that we could find. And we put together a list with all the candidates and who endorsed them.
And that's very helpful because you want to know who's backing these people.
Yeah, I mean, you can... you can see where they're coming from, right? I put a little tagline in there, that old phrase, right?
Yeah.
You know, show me who your friends are and I'll tell you who you are. Mm-hmm. And so what we're doing is we're going to be updating that in the post-primary. A lot of candidates who lost and were endorsed by people, those endorsements are going to gravitate to the winner of the primary. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to start developing even more. But absolutely, you can see certain candidates, you know, like Tom Horn, you know, sure. has a lot of like people that you read about in like 2005, you mm-hmm. know, are the people endorsing him. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of like the Kerry Lake and the Blake Masters. They really tout having, you know, former Trump officials, you know, endorse them. And then you also have certain candidates who have just gathered so many local officials who have given them their support. And so if you go into it, you'll start to get really a sense of how everything is coalescing.
Is that pretty easy to use? How do we access that?
It's at tucson.com/elections. If you go mm-hmm. in there, that's where we have gathered all our election coverage, and you can just check it out. And it's just a list. So we started out with the local offices and move as you scroll through, you'll go all the way down to the like the federal offices. You can search for it by name if you want. But yeah, it's just like reading a story.
You've got a bunch of Zoom interviews with candidates. Mm-hmm. How is that going to take shape?
Yeah, so what we're trying to do is we're going to start off with legislative candidates in the next week or two. We were kind of hoping to be able to do like have all the candidates together at one time, but that immediately hit a wall.
Oh, yeah.
A scheduling wall, you know, yeah. trying to gather everybody.
I remember back in the day it was possible, but it just doesn't seem to be possible anymore.
Yeah, it's just really difficult.
Right.
In the interest of just moving things along,
yeah, exactly.
We'll be doing individuals, pairs, you know, whatever we can do.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll be doing it over Zoom, the same format in a way as like the reader chats that we've been doing forever.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll have the candidate on, we'll have the readers, we'll be able to attend. They can submit questions and we can ask the candidate those questions, you know, always trying to keep it as appropriate as possible. But yeah, we're going to be trying to do that as much as possible. It could be once a week, twice a week, who knows how many it'll take, but we're going to work our way through like the legislative candidates. We're going to do as many of the local candidates as we can. And then after that, we'll move on to the higher offices.
And if anybody has a question, staropinions.tucson.com.
staropinions@tucson.com.
So you take reader questions for the interviews.
Absolutely. If you would like to, you can submit a question.
Okay. You covered the border in Mexico and immigration for a ton of years. A governor today issued an executive order to fill gaps in the border wall over at Yuma. And I've got a picture in front of me. These are giant, like, trailer tractor.
The shipping containers,
shipping
right?
containers. Mm-hmm. What's this about?
So that's news that broke while I was sitting here with you. So I don't know the details specifically.
But you've been over there and you know about this gap.
Yeah, so over in the Yuma area, there is, during the Trump administration, they built, I want to say like 100 miles of a 30-foot tall wall.
Mm-hmm.
But in different small areas, they have gaps, whether there's like a wash that was going through there or some other geological problem. And so for the last, you know, many months, a lot of people like families from Venezuela, for example, they will walk up to the border, walk across, and, you know, there'll be a Border Patrol agent right there. They'll say, hey, you know, I want to ask for asylum. And then they get processed and they'll go through, you know, a lot of them will come to Tucson, to the Casa Elita shelter.
Mm-hmm.
So it has made for a lot of bad photos. And for the Biden administration, it looks disorganized. And so the Biden administration just recently said that they're going to close some of those gaps, which Biden campaigned on not building another foot of the wall. But that I guess has become a political priority for him to close the gaps. I'm not sure what Governor Ducey is doing with the shipping containers. Like I said, this broke just a little bit ago.
Yeah.
But the shipping containers also that's a tool that's used at the border. For example, a couple of years ago, you remember the migrant caravans and all that?
Yeah.
In anticipation of that, which never materialized, but in anticipation of that, at ports of entry, like in Nogales, they put shipping containers across the lanes leading into the country. So that is kind of a tool in the toolbox of the border enforcement.
Another border question for you, and I know our friend Eddie Celaya of the Arizona Daily Star has his podcast because Eddie covers marijuana. Weed. Let me see. Well, I'm trying to think of the name.
Here Weed Go.
Here Weed Go. Thank you very much. And Eddie, by the way, will be with us next Friday here on the show. But you were with him on his podcast talking about the smuggling of marijuana into Arizona is like none.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and my colleague Daniel Kamara also wrote a story about that like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
It's one of these things that's been going on for a while, but it's still just like I'm still wrapping my head around this, because smuggling marijuana was one of like the biggest things going on at the border for the last like 30, 40 years.
Yeah.
Right? It was huge. And yeah. You know, the statistics on it are like a decade ago, Border Patrol agents in the Tucson sector seized over 1 million pounds.
Mm-hmm.
This year, it's like 1,000. And like, you know, 10, 20 years ago, it was people backpacking marijuana across
mm-hmm.
the border.
Mm-hmm.
And they also have, you know, people in, you know, packing SUVs and driving across as well. But now they're tiny amounts.
Yeah.
It looks like marijuana smuggling in the Tucson sector, which forever and ever has mm-hmm. been like the center of marijuana mm-hmm. smuggling at the mm-hmm. border, is just kind of becoming a thing of the past. And I look at this and I just wonder, like, what can we learn from this?
Yeah.
Because all indications are that it's legalizing marijuana. I think yes. there's 19 states now that have legalized marijuana. And it looks, it's like there was this enforcement issue at the border of how do we stop marijuana smuggling? And the solution to it occurred in states within the country.
Mm-hmm.
That they legalized it. The market for illegal marijuana dried up, legal marijuana market exploded, and now we don't have marijuana being smuggled across the border by anywhere near the scale that we had before. And I just feel like there's a lesson to be learned in there.
Legalize it.
Yeah.
that's what they said. There was a kind of a reggae song that's very popular. It was back in the day, legalize it. Well, we legalized it, and the smuggling dried up. So that maybe that's the lesson there.
Yeah. I could go on.
All right. Kurt Prendergast, we will look for your work in the Arizona Daily Star on the opinion page. Thanks, Kurt.
Oh, thanks for having me.
We'll take a break right here. Weekend Watch with Matt Russell's next.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Time for the weekend. I am ready. Weekend Watch with Matt Russell, presented by Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. A lovely day over in Silver City, 80 degrees and a rain shower in the area. So they're having rain as well over there. It's greened up the Gila National Wilderness, only about a three-hour drive from Tucson to Silver City. Start your planning now by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. You'll be very tempted with the long list of recreation ideas and some great places to stay and eat in Silver City. Let's welcome now longtime Weekend Watch host, award-winning Tucson publicist, food and beverage writer for Tucson Foodie and Inside Tucson Business, Matt Russell. Matt, how are you?
Well, I'm doing great. As ready for the weekend as you just said you were, Bill.
Anything? I'm always ready, but especially ready Friday afternoon. And what can we do this afternoon and evening over at Main Gate?
Yeah, I got you covered. You know, the series of every other Friday concerts in Main Gate Square's Geronimo Plaza, it continues this evening when Friday Night Live welcomes Little House of Funk to the stage. This a popular R&B group with early backing from MCA Records. They're going to be performing starting at 7:30 tonight, which is timed perfectly if you want to go grab dinner beforehand. I mean, Main Gate Square is one of those Tucson hubs for international and regional American cuisine. You can get Italian, Japanese, Mexican, Indian, Vietnamese, Middle Eastern, so much more as you walk around the block in Main Gate Square. Friday Night Live is tonight at 7:30.
And you said you had us covered with that kind of list of food cuisines. It sounds like a United Nations of food over at Main Gate Square.
Well, if they don't start using that that tagline, I don't know why. I mean, that's brilliant, Bill Buckmaster.
Well, I did say on Facebook this morning, I felt early in the morning a hint of fall in the area. And I think about Little Ann, Apple Annie's when we start talking about fall.
Absolutely. You know, Bill, Apple Annie's Orchard over there in Wilcox, you know, they're not just about apples and peaches and pumpkins and cherries. This weekend, it's all about those fresh green chilies with their green chili roast tomorrow and Sunday from 7 a.m. to 5. And yes, you can pick your own in true Apple Annie's fashion. You can take home 50-pound burlap sacks, which can be roasted for free on site, or quart-sized containers. They'll jam those full as well. The farm is going to offer free samples of all the peppers, and their orchard grill will be serving lunch. And something tells me green chilies will be on the menu as well. So follow your nose to the green chili roast this weekend out at Apple Annie.
There's been a lot of buzz, Matt Russell, about the Iron Chef. Do you have any more information on that?
Yeah, this is a lot of fun. You know, we talked a little bit about Iron Chef last week on Weekend Watch, Chef Ken Foy being crowned the 2022 Iron Chef of Tucson. Well, this Sunday, we're all going to have the opportunity to enjoy the very dishes that wowed the judges at that epic event last month. It's the Iron Chef dinner at Dante's Fire over there on Grant near Tucson Boulevard, featuring a four-course extravaganza with hors d'oeuvres to start. And remember, every dish has some expression of the secret ingredient, which was cherries. And each dish will also be paired with a premium wine. I say culinary royalty will preside on Sunday night, so don't miss it. You can call 382-9255 to reserve your seats.
Iron Chef has really become quite a tradition, hasn't it, Matt, here on the Tucson food scene?
Yeah, it sure has. And so many chefs, you know, they throw their own hats into the ring every year to see if they have what it takes to go up against the defending Iron Chef. I had the privilege of being a judge for the semifinalist round, and there was not one chef among them that did not deserve the position of Iron Chef. So we're blessed to have such a great culinary community in this in Southern Arizona. And Iron Chef is just one of those manifestations of exactly why that is.
Well, we are blessed to have you, Matt Russell, in our community. Thank you very much. Have a great weekend.
Oh, shucks. Thanks, Phil.
The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. Be well, everybody. Have a safe and lovely weekend.